Welcome to episode 18 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest, The Maven and Reeve Mystery Series. And I'm here with my co-host, the terrific Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, given it's been Book Week, I'm almost afraid to ask this, but where are we at in Megan land this week?
Well, I've stopped rocking in a corner and instead I've done what would be probably considered quite a mindful activity over the last couple of days. I've been helping Chickpea to move her silkworms from one box to another box with fresh mulberry leaves. Now, I've mentioned before that Chickpea has a number of pets. She's got all manner of things. She's got hermit crabs and she's got, what has she got, stick insects, and she's got fish, and she wants axolotls. I'm holding off on those. But silkworms, she has had been breeding these since last year when the beekeeper's mother gave her some eggs. They hatched. We did them last year. Then they were put up into the top of her cupboard until we set a reminder in our calendar. And then a few months ago, the reminder dinged and we opened up this box in the top of her clothes cupboard, Alison. And there's all these like little wriggly things they hatched in her cupboard inside the box. Yeah, and they're quite a lot of work. So I have stripped our mulberry tree of leaves, and the last few days we've spent driving around looking for mulberry trees in our local area because all they can eat is mulberry leaves, and they chomp through them at an absolutely astonishing rate. But we've also had to, with paintbrushes, sit for hours brushing them from old leaves to new leaves. Quite mindful, I've discovered.
How often do you have to do that?
Well, look, probably once a week would be ideal. I'm not going to say that we've done that. We've just been adding fresh leaves on the top of the box. This is why we are now in this situation where we've sat for hours moving teeny weeny, like I'm talking millimetres, silkworms into a new beautiful box. So, oh my gosh, it's been fine. We've chatted while we've done it, and it's been a bit of a come down from Book Week activity. How about you?
Well, I certainly haven't been doing anything that mindful. Actually, all I've been doing is just talking, like so much talking, because obviously Book Week is all about author visits. And although I haven't been able to go anywhere, I am, by the magic of Zoom, I've been Zooming into various schools and various places, for the last week or so, and just talking. And it's that thing of saying the same thing over and over and over and over again. Like, I'm at the point now, I said to the builder last night, I was like, if I ever have to talk about the origin story of the Mapmaker Chronicles ever again, I'm going to tear my hair out. And he goes, yeah, that's just till next week. You just need a break. You'll be fine. It's just
so
like,
calm, so calm.
Oh, he's so calm. But yeah, it's just, it's wonderful. It's been highly entertaining because the Zoom experience with a group of 100 or so kids is quite different to the in the room experience. And of course, kids being kids, they're highly inventive as to ways that they can disrupt the group without, really attracting a huge amount of notice from the actual people who are supervising. Like, there's more people supervising a Zoom than there are when I'm in a room with 200 kids. It's fascinating. So I had one kid.
Less control.
I had this one kid who I'm like sitting there and I'm talking about the magic of writing and the magic of reading. And he put the spotlight on himself and proceeded to make a Milo in front of me. Like, they had the whole big tin and poured the milk and stirred it and then, starts scooping the crunchy Milo off the top. And I, It was so distracting. I couldn't work out how to get rid of him. And so all I could do was watch with one eye while this whole process unfolded in front of me, and still maintain my author voice and keep chatting away about the magic of reading and the magic of writing.
You just got to power through.
Oh, you do. And then, you know, they change your borders. They're waving at me with their little, you know, virtual waiver things. And it's been funny. I've had some of the best questions this week honestly, amazing, really amazing. So yeah, lots and lots of talking. And in another exciting bit of news, maybe not so exciting, I broke my office chair, like the chair that I've been sitting in for years. No,
That would have been better.
That would have been high. Wouldn't it have been good in a Zoom, right?
Yeah.
No, that's not quite what happened. I've got it sort of on this rug thing that, because I'm on carpet now and I wasn't on carpet in my old house. Anyway, so I went to drag it forward on this rug that I'm sitting on at the moment, and the wheels just came off, like they snapped. And I was like, there was this crunch and then this like bang, I was on the ground, you know. But, you know, I've written a lot of fantastic stories in that chair, so I'm a little bit bereft. And now I've got to find a new one. That's the worst of it. And Valerie, my co-host at So You Want to Be a Writer, is all like, you just need to drop the $1,500 on the Aeron office chair.
I was just going to say, she would have opinions on this. I can tell that.
Oh, she has so many opinions. So she would call the – she's got one of the Aerons, and she said it is the best per use purchase investment that she's ever made. There are like three of them. One of them is a Dyson hair straightener, but let's not even talk about that. but this chair is another one. It's the number one thing. And so she's like, you just need to do, you know, you just got to get yourself one of those. And I thought, I'm actually starting to think, like, because I don't know, like, do you ever think about spending that much on an office chair? But I'm starting to think, given the number of hours that I spend in my office chair, and given my advancing age, I have to look after my back. I'm thinking I might even go there. So I'll keep you updated as to what I do. But
I would like the update on that.
Oh, you know, it's gonna be, it'll be something else for us to waffle about. It'll be great.
And I will live through you.
Well, you can come and visit me when the borders open, and you can sit in my chair and we'll take a photo.
We would love that.
Now, let's move on, because I feel that's enough waffle for one day. Let's get on to the book mail. Now, Megan, announcement. You are going to be so jealous. I finally received my copy of Stop the Dad Jokes by Adrian Beck, illustrated by Simon Greiner. I did.
I still don't have one.
Oh, Adrian Beck, if you're listening, she still doesn't have one. However, I win. This is me winning the week right here. So I have my copy here in front of me, and it's very, very funny. It's called Stop the Dad Jokes. So it is, of course, full of 100 million dad jokes, and actually it's a picture book, so possibly not that many. So what I did was I tried a few out on the builder yesterday, because I thought if anyone is a connoisseur of the dad joke, that man has it sewn up, and he gives it the thumbs up. So if there is a person in your life that has the dad joke gene, and according to this book, it goes across all species, and it's pretty much just comes with the territory. You kind of get it like a dad badge once you cross over that border. And so it's about, you know, a dad and a son, and they're going around the zoo, and dad's saying, you know, that, you know, dad jokes, my boy, they're quite the tradition. Look round and you'll find it's every dad's mission. Yes, dads of all species just like a good laugh. Ask my old friend here, Mr. Giraffe. And then on each page, with each kind of species of dad, there's a dad joke that relates. So the dad joke that relates to the giraffe is, can you guess my favorite fruit? A neck. Tureen.
So bad.
They're so bad. I mean, that's the thing with a dad joke. They're so bad. They're good. Yeah. What do you call a hippo standing on one leg? A hoppo. Anyway.
Why are you even laughing?
I don't even know, because you kind of have to, don't you? Yeah. It's kind of like there's some rule that if dads make jokes, you have to laugh. It's probably because they don't make them that often.
Yeah. I think I'll have to get that one for the beekeeper, because he's got what he calls his dad outfit, which is like really brightly colored, quite ugly board shorts and a polo shirt, which
perfect.
I don't
that
think
is
doesn't
a,
really match. But
that's a dad outfit, right?
My dad outfit. I can wear this to rugby. coffee. I can wear this to the coffee shop. And yep. I just look at him and go, oh, really?
And then they also have the other dad outfits, which relate to old band T-shirts and jeans. And they wear that when they're going to be cool.
Old band T-shirt.
Yeah.
And the other thing he does, which is not a thing, although my brother encourages it, is this is terrible. I can't believe I'm saying this publicly. He wears socks, colourful socks, with his Birkenstocks.
Oh,
that is not a thing.
That's a dad thing.
It's really bad.
I think all dads go down that road. Mind you, maybe Adrian can weigh in on this. Adrian, if you'd like to just send us a little bit of a message about whether you wear any form of sock with your sandals, that would be excellent.
Very bad look. Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, so great for Father's Day. Like, you know, it's a great book for kids and dads to read together. And, you know, it's, I mean, we all know that dads make really bad jokes. And I think it just needs to be acknowledged on a day like Father's Day. So that would be my recommendation if you're looking for a gift. Stop the Dad Jokes by Adrian Beck and illustrated by Simon Greiner. Now, the other bit of book mail that I have this week, it's been a bit of a slow week for me, disappointingly. However, I'm not disappointed to receive this. And it is the second book in the Wednesday Weeks series. Wednesday Weeks and the Crown of Destiny by Dennis Knight and Christy Byrne. And, of course, we talked a lot about the first book in this. Well, you know, they've come out very close together. Quite impressed by this team.
I love that.
So if you started out with the Wednesday Weeks journey, here is book two for you. If you have yet to discover Wednesday Weeks and the blend of science and fantasy that is involved in that series, check it out. So that's my book mail. What have you got?
Look, I've gone a bit of a non-fiction-y kind of a route this week. I've got three picture books, two of which are non-fiction and one of which I'm just going to say is kind of like factual
fiction.
Yeah, yeah, factual fiction.
Factual fiction.
The first one is Power Up by Charles Hope, published by Wild Dog. I love Charles Hope as a nonfiction writer. Like, when I see his name on a book, I feel reassured that the book will be a quality production. And Power Up is that. It looks at it details how we source and use power so that readers will come away with a comprehensive understanding of the various materials we source to create power, the different options which are currently available for power, and how the future looks in the renewable space, which is the bit that I really liked. Because, of course, as a teacher librarian, I've got lots of books in my library on power, but this is a contemporary one which has got lots of up-to-date information. As with all Wild Dog books, and Charles Hope does a great job of this, there's a mix of really good informative pictures and some illustrations as well. It's a well-designed book with really good headings and subheadings, and not an overwhelming amount of text, which is something I really like that Charles does. He's just very to the point, and here's your information, let's move on. I rather like that. Who needs to waffle? I mean, we waffle enough.
Clearly need to waffle, but other people, it's much better when they get to the point.
Charles is terribly concise. I've never met the man, but he must be a very concise man. If I wrote that book on power, it would be double the size. Anyway, that's why I didn't do it.
There would be silkworms involved.
Oh, mate, there would be. Speaking of silkworms, my next book is Seasons in the City by Megan McKean. And look, really, she could have included some silkworms in spring in this one. I do like a Megan McKean book. They're beautifully designed books. And this one is a look at different seasons in cities all around the world. It's definitely a must add to the library collection. And our U1s have, in fact, just been studying seasons. So I'm a little sad this didn't arrive a month ago. But it's got some really interesting places that I mentioned, not your normal. It's got Jaipur, it's got, I'm just scrolling through, Singapore, Beijing, New York, Reykjavik, Montreal. So it looks at different cities and the way that cultures divide their year into six or more seasons and how the tropical regions may just have two seasons and many places in the world divide into four, summer, autumn, winter, spring. It also looks at the way that throughout history people have welcomed new seasons with important rituals, and plenty of these traditions continue today as the weather changes and brings different occasions to celebrate. So it's a really a great book for the home or school library. And then my final one is A Trip to the Hospital by Freda Chu. And gosh, look, Al, sometimes I read a new book and I just think, well, that is just so darned clever. And this is the case here. It is a fiction book with an awful lot of fact overlaid. So it's, you know, look, going to the hospital might seem scary or worrying. You might be hurt, you might feel sick, or maybe you just have to visit a friend. But you don't have to be worried is the message of this book, because hospitals are amazing places filled with really clever people doing incredible things. And we follow these three little people, Momo, Rani and Henry, on three very different adventures, medical experiences inside a busy children's hospital. This is a really, really clever book and an absolute must-have in every home and school collection. And I would also like to suggest that it should be in the offices and waiting rooms of practitioners who deal with young people and health. It's a really good one. It explores the amazing things that happen inside a hospital. It gives thanks to all of the hardworking people, from the orderlies to the doctors to the specialists and the physios, that help keep us safe and well. And it reassures, but it doesn't sugarcoat at all. Which is what I think helps it to rise above your typical sort of first trip to the hospital book, because it's got medical equipment pictured, the experiences are very real, the practitioners are all very real, and in fact they are real medical practitioners and hospital staff, and some of them pictured in the back of the book. I just think, look, we do often sometimes underestimate children and assume that they just want a cheery book about some of these big experiences in life. And this one is certainly cheery, but it's cheeriness and playfulness balanced with medical and balanced with reality. And it's reassuring, but it's also realistic. And it helps children to develop a language around hospitals and what that might look like. Like, it talks about triage nurses and the emergency department. I just love it. It's fresh, it's engaging, it's quite quirky and humorous, and it's really well pitched at a young but astute audience. So I love it. Highly recommended.
Fantastic. We do get asked a bit in Your Kids Next Read for that sort of book as well. I guess, you know, it's like preparation is the key to everything, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
it is.
I guess the more realistic a preparation is, the better, because if you go expecting no fairies in doctor suits and that's not what you get, it's a bit disappointing, isn't it?
A bit devo, isn't it? Yeah.
It is a bit devo. Not that I've ever seen a book like that with fairies in doctor suits, but, you know, just in case. Maybe that's my next book.
There are clowns in hospitals.
Oh,
now.
That's true. There are
clowns, fairies, you know, similar. I mean, there are some dentists now which have dental staff dressed up as the tooth fairy. So, look. True story.
You and can I just say, Megan Daly, that you would make an excellent tooth fairy, because watching your book week costumes, and can I just say, so Megan surprised me during book week by appearing dressed as Maven from the Maven and Reeve mysteries, and it was such an exciting moment. I had a small tear in my eye.
Aww.
You looked so lovely.
Can't be surprised, actually. I'm not very good at surprises.
No, it was so good. It was brilliant. All right, now let's move on. Speaking of questions that we get asked in the group, we will move on to our bingo question. Now, the bingo questions are the questions that come up over and over and over again in the Your Kids Next Read community. And this week we have had a bingo rise to the surface again, and it is about cookbooks for kids. Now, I understand why that one is, you know, bubbling up at the moment, because, of course, you know, here we all are stuck at home. And in actual fact, can I just share, I found myself in the kitchen yesterday with Mr. 14, who had been asked to do school for remote learning. He had to do a do-it-yourself STEM project. And, of course, we
that
were kind of
messy.
Oh, well, it was, you know, I was like, well, you can plant a garden, because I've got some herb seedlings that need to go in.
And that would be useful.
That wasn't going to work. Anyway, he decided he wanted to bake something. So we baked an apple cake together, and it allowed me to see where he needs a bit of work. I realized that the child doesn't even have a good peeling technique, and so we've made a date to do a bit more of this stuff. He has fantastic gross motor skills, like he's really athletic, but his fine motor skills are probably, you know, need a little bit more work. So that was the bonus, and the apple cakes were delicious, and I feel as that if all science was that delicious, I probably would have got more into it as I went forward. But let's talk about cookbooks for kids, because, you know, there's a lot of them out there. Finding a good one is not always easy. What sorts of things are we looking for, Megan?
I really love cookbooks. I love them for emerging readers because they have minimal text, and they're often really good for young readers around six, seven, eight who are just starting out on their independent reading journey. And they allow success with reading, and they also are reading for a purpose. So if you've got a young reader that's really not enjoying, say, your home readers, or is just sort of like resisting reading, and sometimes as children are just starting to learn to read, there can be this resistance because it's hard, and they find it a bit hard, so they want to do something easier. I often find if you introduce a cookbook, it kind of can tip them over that edge into, oh, I can read that and I'm creating something. So it's reading for a purpose, and I love that. We do a lot of procedural texts in the early years of primary school, and cookbooks are a procedural text, a great example of a procedural text. So they're great from that aspect, and then children can go on to write their own recipes. And there's obviously a lot of numeracy involved in cookbooks as well. So they hit a lot of key areas for me. They hit literacy and numeracy and reading for a purpose and reading for enjoyment, and also a non-fiction book. Sometimes if you've got young readers who aren't terribly into non-fiction, a cookbook can be great. But what I look for in a good kids cookbook is the steps laid out really well. I don't like too much happening on the page. I like the ingredients, and I like the steps laid out really well. I do like some good photographs or diagrams. I just don't like too much happening. The Puffin Little series has got a really good cookbook, which the small bee has really enjoyed cooking from. And my all-time favorite cookbook for kids is the Donna Hay Kids Cooking Book. And in fact, she at the moment is offering during lockdown on Thursday afternoons, you can sign up, and she does a live online cooking course, cooking workshop for kids, and it's free, and you get a downloadable recipe card, which are all recipes from that book, Donna Hay Kids. So they've been really good. My girls have done one or two of those, and yeah, I really like that Donna Hay cookbook. The illustrations are, the photographs are very clear, it's designed beautifully, and yeah, I like it. What about you, Al?
Well, I've actually gone through the, because as I said, this is a question that comes up quite a lot. I've gone through the recommendations in the Facebook community, because one thing that is brilliant about our community is that, there are 20,000 members of that group now, and you will notice that some of them have specialist interests, and the cookbook ones are very similar people, responding to those questions. And I've just chosen some of the ones that have come up regularly, for different reasons. And so I'm just going to talk you through some of those recommendations. So Tilly's Kitchen Takeover by Matilda Ramsay, who is the daughter of Gordon Ramsay.
I've heard that one's very good.
Yes, recommended for age group 12 to 14, and it includes tips and tricks from Gordon. So it's apparently very good. The recipes are very tasty, and it's kind of got a fun youth kind of vibe about it. Gruffalo Crumble and Other Recipes by Princess Mirabelle, which is based on the picture book by Julia Donaldson and Axel Scheffler, apparently has surprisingly tasty recipes for
I've
lower
got that one
primary
in my
and is
library,
actually
yeah.
good. Yeah. So that's a recommendation if you've got smaller kids. Basics to Brilliance Kids by Donna Hay is another one that has come up as a recommendation. So Donna Hay's actually got a couple of different kids' cookbooks. I used to get her magazine. Do you remember
I
she did
loved
that?
her magazine. I've still got all of my copies, and I was so devo when they
I
stopped.
know. Well, she used to do a quarterly kids one
I
that was
know.
cookbooks for kids, and
And
I've kept all
party.
of
She did
those. Oh,
party
and the party
ones.
ones were
Oh my
great. Yeah.
gosh, so good.
Then there is so the Four Ingredients, massive successful cookbook for adults. There is a kids version of that by Kim McCosker and Rachel Birmingham. These are recipes that have four ingredients in them, and apparently it's a very good, but it is also the most be it is the biggest seller in that four ingredients group.
Really?
Yeah, it says on the cover, which really surprised me.
I'm a little sus. I always have to add more than four ingredients.
Well, I guess if you're starting out learning the
Oh, I
basic,
know, I
learning
know.
the basics, four ingredients is a great place to start. I might have a look at it for Mr. 14. Maybe there's no apple peeling involved. It might be quite good. Now, another one that was recommended, which is, that lovely, again, like the Gruffalo, that literary and cookbook vibe combined, is a book called Jolly Good Food, a children's cookbook inspired by the stories of Enid Blyton. And it's by Allegra McAvady, I'd say, and Mark Beach, who is the illustrator. And I look, honestly, I mean, it's got to have lashings of ginger beer and
And I've
jam.
made the Pop Tarts out of that one. I actually own that one.
Oh, you do? Is it good?
It's really good, really good. I mean,
Okay.
the English recipes, but they're very good, and the Pop Tarts were great.
And if you've got a kid who loves, Enid Blyton stories, I mean, the idea of being able to make a kind of Famous Five inspired, picnic, I think would be quite amazing.
Absolutely.
Now, this is one that I would also recommend, and it gets recommended a lot for older kids. Cooking Up a Storm, the Teen Survival Cookbook by Sam Stern. And I actually bought that for Book Boy a couple of years ago because he actually really likes cooking. And it's a good, solid basics. You can feed yourself, you can actually get by sort of a cookbook. And I would recommend that one. Now another one that has come up, and it does actually look lovely, and I haven't seen it myself, but it's highly recommended, is The Complete Cookbook for Young Chefs by America's Test Kitchen. So I would imagine measurements, etc., are US based. Do they use? I'm just trying to think what they don't.
They, But if it's an Australian, if it's for the Australian market, they've probably converted. I often find that. So it's
I usually
probably.
find that American recipes online use cups, and they're not using grams or ounces or anything like
No.
that. They're using cup measurements, and I
Yeah.
actually prefer that anyway, so I'm all over that. And then, of course, the Kids Cookbook by the Australian Women's Weekly. There are two volumes of that. You cannot go wrong
Oh, you
with an
can't
Australian
go
Women's
wrong.
Weekly
They've got the
cookbook.
test kitchen,
They
Al.
look on. I used to work in the same office as the Test Kitchen,
Oh,
and we used to
my
get.
gosh.
I know they would come down and they would be like, "We've got these today," and we would be like, "Fantastic!" Just
Oh,
throw them at
me.
us. And the last one that also is recommended regularly is a book called The Silver Spoon. So there's a big Italian cookbook called The
I
Silver
have that.
Spoon, but there is a children's version, The Silver Spoon for Children by Amanda Grant and Harriet Russell, and it's all Italian recipes. So
And
that's
it's
another one.
great. They are quite complex still, the children's
Oh,
silver
even as the
spoon recipe.
children's one. Okay.
Yes, but they're very, very good. And I would also just like to give a plug to that Sam Stern one you recommended. That was without a doubt the most borrowed cookbook in my previous library. And
Ah.
yeah, it was really, really popular.
Ah,
So,
there you go. All
love
right, so
that
we
one.
will, of course, put all of these recommendations with links in the show notes, which you will find at yourkidsnextread.com. And that is where you will also find information about our book mail and all of the various things. You might find a random picture of Megan dressed up as Maven
You
from Maven and
probably will.
Reef. You might, yeah. And you might even see some silkworms if you're really excited. All right. Now, let's move on to our quick tips. What is your quick tip or two for the week, Megan?
Well, I'm going to talk about how to encourage reading aloud because last night, I think it was on Instagram, I posted a little clip of Chickpea reading to our dog, and quite a lot of people commented on it and said how sweet that was. But there's more to it than just sweetness. I have always really encouraged my children to read aloud because we live in an age where we're asking students to do so many oral presentations in schools, and reading aloud teaches things like tone and pace. And what's the word like voice? What's the word, Al? You know, when you want
Projection.
to projection, thank you, and expression, better than anything I know. It's really, really great to encourage your children, no matter how old they are, to read aloud. So I often get my 9-year-old and my 13-year-old to read aloud, and obviously with the small bees, they are definitely still reading aloud because they are only 5 and 7 and they need to do that for their homework. But I would encourage you to do it a lot with children who are also a lot older. It's really great practice. Both of my girls do drama lessons at school, private drama lessons. Not that they really need to, because they're very good at all of those things, particularly the voice projection. But I do really think that they've gained so much from reading aloud. And I've always encouraged my children, and these are my tips, I guess. I've always encouraged my children, if I can't or don't have the time for them to read aloud to me, to read aloud to the dog. And as many of you will know, my dog has anxiety, so he loves hearing the sound of the voice of people he loves. So read to your dog, your cat, or your soft toy. Get your children reading aloud to whatever inanimate or pet, real life pet you have in the house. Read aloud to loved ones via Zoom, particularly in these times that we live in. My mum, in the last lot of lockdown in Brisbane, was reading on Zoom every day with one of my nieces, and they both really enjoyed that. It's a great purposeful reading. And encourage your children to read plays or play scripts, which you can always borrow from your school library or your public library, and poetry as well. Reciting poetry is a really nice one as well. But I would super duper encourage you to get your kids to keep reading aloud for as long as you can. It improves so much for them. They're my tips.
Oh, those are great tips. I love the whole idea. I mean, I read aloud to my dog because he's the only one who will listen to my draft manuscripts anymore. So he just quietly sits there and looks adoringly at me while I, yeah, you know, rattle on.
And I'm like, that's a really good, that's part of it as well. And I should have said that reading aloud teaches you to, it's a really good way to edit. So I get my 13-year-old, she's writing an English something or other at the moment, and I got her to read it aloud, and she picked up so many things that just didn't quite work when she read it aloud. So do you read your texts aloud as one of the ways that you proofread?
I don't read them aloud when I proofread. I read them aloud at my first edit when I do, when I have the draft. I read them aloud at that point.
Yeah,
because it just allows me to hear straight away, you know, where I've made mistakes, like where characters' eyes have changed colour, and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. I can I can hear all that. I can hear where things are missing. That's the other thing that you hear when you read aloud is, wait a minute, where did that come from? That kind of stuff. So I used to read my manuscripts to my children, you know, when they were younger and wanted to spend endless hours
of fun time with me.
Look, it's so disappointing. I have actually volunteered to record them so they can just listen to them while they do their other things, but they're not that keen on that either. So I don't know. It's hard to get good help these days. What can I say? Really hard.
You raise these kids and they won't even listen to your manuscripts.
I know. But, you know, that is one of the writing tips that I share when I do my, you know, book week talks and things like that. I always say to kids, read your work out loud, because you will hear where the problems are. But my other writing tip, I've got a quick tip, and I've only got one this week. It's quite exciting. And it's my number one book week writing tip. It's the one that I always use, which I always tell kids, that I invariably bring up at every single conversation I ever have about writing. And my number one book week writing tip is this: take notice and take note, because ideas are everywhere. Ideas are all around us. They are in the things that we see. They are in the things that we hear. They are in the things that we think. They are in the questions we ask ourselves. They are in things that we feel. And writers are just people who have trained themselves to see them. So they take notice. They observe. When they're having a conversation with someone and there's some kind of little, you know, response, you know, that or oh, or whatever, they take notice of that, and then they write them down somewhere. And that's the second part that's really important, because if you keep a notebook or a file on your computer or somewhere where you can just take notice of those moments, of those things you think and those things you feel, and just the moments that give you goosebumps and the questions that make you go, why? Like the whole Adaban Cipher novels, both of them, they came from me reading a newspaper article and getting to the end of it and going, why? Why would you write a book that no one can read? What could it possibly be? Why? Write it down. So if you keep a notebook or a file on your computer, you will never, ever be short of a story idea. And if you're never short of a story idea, it means that when you're handed that blank piece of paper to write your story or do whatever assignment, you're so far ahead, because you're not sitting there thinking, what am I going to write about? There's always something to write about. So that's my number one book tip, book week writing tip.
Love it.
Which brings us to the end of our podcast for this week, Megan Daly. What are you up to? What's happening?
Well, First of all, I'd like to give a shout out and a thanks to one of our podcast listeners, Wendy Belfortis, who sent me via school the most beautiful bee earrings, which feature the cover of – they're a bee and a book earring, Al.
What?
So clever. It's the cover – like it's like they're little – they're made. They're a book, and the cover is The Very Clever Bee by Felicity Marshall, which I talked about on the podcast ages ago.
Yeah.
And she wrote me this beautiful card that may be a little bit weepy in a good way. It's just so lovely when someone takes the time out from their day to thank you for what you do, because, you know, you just – you chat away here and you talk online, but, you know, it's a lot when someone actually – when you go, oh, like I'm listening to you and I like it. So
I know.
It's lovely.
We talk into the ether, and when the ether talks back to us, it is a massive moment. So, that's brilliant. How sweet.
Yeah, so I'm going to wear them this afternoon because I'm off to school in a little while, and one of the things I need to do is meet with the lovely Mario, who is a science technician at the school. We're talking about risk assessments for beehives and placement of bees for optimal movement through the school. So, you know, I'll wear my bee
book. Wow. That's exciting.
I know, right? Love a good risk assessment.
Well, me too. Nothing I love more than a risk assessment. Oh, gosh. Well, I'm going to be doing more talking. So I've got more podcasting coming up. I'm doing a whole bunch of interviews for So You Want to Be a Writer, because I've been a bit off my game with that. I've been so busy with stuff. I'm going to be filming a new series of writing tips that I'm putting together. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to be writing something new. I've got this idea bubbling up. I've got a character starting to talk to me. And now I need to just sort of follow her into that story and find out what that story might be. I know, it's quite exciting. So that's us. You can find all of our show notes and more information about us at yourkidsnextread.com. And we will look forward to seeing you again next week.
We will indeed.